Good evening, and welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Our guest this evening is Brazilian sculptor Otavio Shippe. Otavio is known for his innovative installations of ready-made objects such as antique telegraph machines, tuning forks, eyeglasses, elevator cabins, and electric poles. He has been involved in numerous international group and solo exhibitions. He holds a Bachelor of Science degree from the Universidade Federal in Rio de Janeiro and a degree from the EAV School of Visual Arts, also in Rio. He has received numerous awards and done a variety of art residencies, such as the 2015 Berlin Fellowship from the Akademie der Kunst Berlin, the 2017 Knowledge Link through Art and Science Award from the Max Planck Society in Germany, and this year he was the guest artist at the European Organization for Nuclear Research. He has exhibited his work at national and international venues, such as the Kunstmuseum Thun in Switzerland, the Schering Stiftung Space Project and Akademie der Kunst in Germany, the MOT International in the United Kingdom, the Museum of Modern Art in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and more. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you. You have a very innovative, imaginative body of works that mix art and science, light, music, sound, and much more. Can you describe your artistic process for one of your more experimental projects and tell us about the discovery you've made from some of your work?
Yes, sure. So I generally work with different kind of media and techniques, and it really depends on the project that I'm developing. I generally start from something like a curiosity or an article I find. Sometimes I'm inspired by a movie or a book I read, and then I begin a long process of investigation. So I do a lot of research, and then slowly I begin to develop the project for the installations. And generally, I invite other people to collaborate, such as musicians or sometimes architects or even writers or photographers. So I do work a lot in collaboration with other artists.
And can you describe a particular work that you found most exciting and inspiring?
Yes. So, for example, the sound installation Mechanical Unconscious consists of a dialogue between telegraph machines and telephone sounds. So I began working with early telegraph machines, and I did a lot of research around the origins of telecommunication, the Morse code, how the first transmission lines have been installed in the United States. And then I thought this work had a lot to do with language, with the limits between natural and artificial language. So I invited a musician called Sergio Krakowski. He's from Brazil and lives in New York. And I invited him to compose a piece, a musical piece for telegraph machines, telephone sounds, and synthetic voices. And he has a PhD in mathematics, in computer music. So he used his PhD to develop this kind of communication between the objects and the sounds.
And where did you install this piece?
We showed this piece in Rio de Janeiro at Galeria Anita Schwartz. It was shown also in São Paulo at Centro Cultural Maria Antônia and in London at MOT International Gallery.
Did you find some of the response was to this installation?
That was a work that people showed a lot of interest. I think there is a lot of historic background, a lot of scientific background as well, and somehow there is a sense of theater in this kind of installation. So I think it was a work that evoked very different feelings, a sense of nostalgia, and at the same time, a kind of physical or like a meditative experience. So I think that was a very interesting work to show.
When did you find that this combination of your interests in art and science and music may have first shown itself?
I was always very curious and very interested in music since my early childhood. And I have always been going to concerts, all different kinds of jazz, classical music, since I was very young. And I think it was very natural for me to make this relationship between science and music and visual arts, because somehow I was never interested in one specific medium or subject. So I was always going from one place to the other. So it was somehow very natural when I began to develop my work to find these subjects that are somehow interconnected. I think whenever I start a project, I always look for areas that can be different areas or different subjects or even objects or things that don't relate, don't have a very clear relation. And I think my work has a lot to do with finding this kind of interconnections between stories or discoveries or experiments or whatever the subject is. So I think it's part of my character. I'm always looking for another story or another subject to investigate.
And can you give us an example of a work that you did more recently that you really found intriguing?
For example, the other sound installation I developed in collaboration with Sergio Krakowski, which was presented at the Schering Stiftung, the Schering Foundation in Berlin, in Germany. It was an exhibition curated by Alessandra Pace, and the exhibition was around the relationship between neuroscience and mirrors or reflected images. So we basically created a kind of space in which some objects from the 16th century that used to belong to a magician, from an English magician who used to cast the future for Elizabeth the Queen. So he used to work with a black mirror and the crystal sphere and the golden disc. So we used those objects, which now belong to the British Museum, and we created another sound composition. Actually, it was a sound installation that related the vibration of light and sound, and we were investigating how those elements could change our mental states. So through the use of those objects and sound and light, we created this relationship between contemporary neuroscience and magic and other more spiritual elements.
What was that one called?
That was called The Smoking Mirror.
You've also been involved in a residency in New York. And how does this experience enhance how you do your work and some of the processes that you've explored?
In 2013, I was an artist in residence at Residency Unlimited in New York. I spent 2 months there, and it was a very interesting experience. Basically, I spent a lot of time meeting people, showing my work, presenting lectures, and I had a lot of relationship with different artists and curators from other countries. And I think that exchange was very important for my work. I could see a different system, more dynamic than the one in Brazil, more internationalized. I think my work also found some interesting responses. And I began to show my work in New York. I began to show my work in Europe after this period. I think it's very important for an artist to find other places to show the work and establish connection with different cultures. I think that's, at least for me, that's something that is very important for my creativity, my creative process. I need to somehow have a different atmosphere and look for a different input from different perspectives and cultures. So I think New York was a very important place. The residency program was very profitable in this sense. In 2018, I began to show my work at Shin Gallery that represents my work now. It was also very interesting to begin working with a gallery in New York and finding new connections and people to interact.
What's next for you? Do you have any projects that are in the works that you'd like to share with us?
I just presented an exhibition in Copenhagen in collaboration with Danish artist Andreas Albrechtsen at Spectre Gallery. I'm now beginning to work at my studio on a few different projects, and it's not very clear. I'm in this kind of phase where I don't have any work clear in my mind, so in the middle of this process of finding the areas to explore and like basic research, back to basic research.
Do you have any other artists or any other exhibits that might spark a few ideas?
Well, a very interesting exhibition I saw recently in Copenhagen. Many artists have inspired my work from very different fields. For example, let me think, Sildo Meireles is a Brazilian artist that I admire a lot. There is poets I admire a lot. So, for example, it's a poet I have been reading recently. Sometimes I'm more interested into contemporary art. Sometimes I'm more interested in modern art. It's really going from one place and the other. I just thought of Sildo because I was reading a book about him before we began the call. I think it's very important to have different interests rather than art. I think art is like a result from experiences and different backgrounds you have. I think it's very hard to be an artist without other interests and other fields of exploration. I think it's really helpful to use these foundation years for at least looking for other areas, because I think somehow this sum of knowledge and of references, they generate the work in the long term. It's more what you learn outside the studio somehow than the practice inside the studio, at least for me. It's very important for me to cross these borders.
Well, you've certainly crossed a lot and brought some fascinating aspects into your work. And I'd like to thank you so much for being on our show this evening and sharing your insight and advice with us. It's been very interesting and a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much. It was a great pleasure.
Thank you. For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Art World Innovators on UMFM 101.5. Our guest this evening is Cal Lane, an internationally acclaimed Canadian sculptor known for innovatively transforming industrial steel products and ordinary objects into sculptures and lacy artworks. She holds a bachelor's degree in fine arts from Nova Scotia College of Art and Design and a master's degree in fine arts and sculpture from State University of New York. Cal has been featured in the prominent sculpture magazine and was the recipient of the International Sculpture Center's 2001 Outstanding Student Achievement in Contemporary Sculpture Award. Cal's tapestry delicately cut ornate patterns into large steel and iron structures, creating sensitive, alluring, and aesthetically captivating pieces. Her work is in numerous collections and has been exhibited on a wide range of solo and group exhibitions nationally and internationally, including the Sydney Biennale in Australia, galleries in Europe, the UK, the United Arab Emirates, and the US, and more. Here to speak with us today about her exceptional sculptures and artistic career is Cal Lane. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Susan. Nice to talk to you on the phone.
Thank you. Your carved sculptures are very innovative, with captivating narratives and titles. How do you come to your ideas, and what is your process for unfolding these narratives into your unique sculptures?
It's always hard to know how to start to talk about these things, because I went through such a wide-ranging process to get to where I am now. I started art school a little bit later in life. I started my undergraduate degree when I was 30. So before that, I had many different occupations that I was traveling through. I grew up on Vancouver Island and grew up in my mother's hair salon and, you know, grew up in a working class family, so I wasn't encouraged to go to art school. So I was sort of pushed to become a hairdresser because that's what I knew. And so I did it very, very briefly after high school. But it was not my world. I didn't fit in there, to say the least. I was a tomboy. Never wore makeup. I used to get in trouble for not combing my hair all the time. So I went from hairdressing to welding. I was reading the paper one day and there was an ad for becoming a welder to go through trade school. And I thought, oh, perfect. You know, I can dress like a slob. I can curse. I can be more myself, not have to wear makeup. And so I went to Camosun College on Vancouver Island, went through trade school, became a welder. And just those two contrasts, that was sort of the seed of everything I started making after that. Once I eventually did go to art school in Nova Scotia, my experiences as both a hairdresser and then becoming a welder, just those social contrasts I found fascinating. I guess I've always been a person that is confused by how people judge you for seemingly meaningless reasons. both as a hairdresser, you know, I was considered a failure because I didn't wear makeup and didn't poof my hair up. And likewise, once I became a welder, people judged me because I had long hair. They wanted me to have short hair. So my sculptures became about that, about judging social, gender, and visual objects. As a sculptor, I love working with steel for that reason. Actually, like it as a almost performance art, you know, cutting steel, cutting this big masculine, cold, industrial material into a delicate, feminine-like material, I thought was a interesting contrast, both as an object and as a process.
Have any of the earlier modernist sculptors and their works captured your imagination and experimentation and discoveries in your practice, especially with steel? That's something you may have seen in other artists' work.
Definitely. Especially, you know, going through the Nova Scotia College of Art and Design, it was very modernist based. The sculpture philosophies were about the purity of sculpture, truth to materials. It's a very macho and masculine world, the sculpture world. I would say when I was in college, I loved the idea of disintegrating those philosophies in a sense. My first big show at the Art Gallery of Nova Scotia was a series of really large I-beams that I had hand cut into lace patterns. And that was really kind of poking fun at both worlds, poking fun of that phallic, masculine, industrial world, and then me hand cutting it into a delicate object. I mean, I love modernism, but I just loved playing with it because now I think, you know, because modernism was sort of celebrating the Industrial Revolution and manufactured objects. And we're kind of not in that world anymore. We're realizing the pollution and the harm that those sorts of companies had created. And so the handmade object is becoming more of a relevant object, I think, to me. So taking this industrial symbol and hand carving it into a handmade delicate object was sort of poking fun at modernism in a sense, or at least questioning it.
Also in 2012, you exhibited your work at the 18th Biennale of Sydney in Australia, All Our Relations. What was this Biennale about and how did you become involved?
I was invited to that. I think why they thought of me, the directors, was because one of the venues is Cockatoo Island, which is an island in Sydney Harbour. It used to be a penitentiary and then a shipbuilding island. So it had all these old industrial buildings and lots of rough steel pieces around. I think they thought of me because I was in the process of working on a submarine in Montenegro at the time. And there were some, I think, submarine parts and boat parts. And they asked if I wanted to cut up something there, which I loved. But they ended up finding a shipping container for me. So I was there for a month working on it. I cut it up with a plasma cutter called it a domestic cage. So I do a lot of work with dirt, ephemeral pieces where I sift dirt through lace patterns. I sift it through onto people and I photograph it, an object. And since I was in Australia, I used the sand and created in this huge, huge industrial space. I covered the floor from the desert and created this rug out of the sand. I mean, I love doing something like a Biennale. I love that there are people from so many different countries and we're all kind of communicating the same language. It was a wonderful experience. I loved being there.
Did that collaboration and experience with so many others enhance your artistic development?
It's more that I like making the connections with people, I think. And I like the change of venue. You know, I'm a very introverted artist. I spend a lot of time alone in my studio. And I love doing residencies and biennales because it forces me out of my comfort space and to meet other people and to see fresh ideas and talk with people. I think that concentration of people working around you, sometimes it causes conflict, which is a positive thing as well. I kind of go back and forth. I work alone in my studio for long periods of time, and then I realize, okay, I got to get out and meet other people. And then so I'm in that stage right now where I need to get out of the studio and travel a bit with other people.
In addition to collaborating with other people, does the surrounding culture and environment have a part in the outcome?
I think where I live right now really suits me because I am both a country person and a city person, and I live about 45 minutes to an hour outside of Manhattan. And the Hudson Valley is so beautiful and quiet, and I need that. I need that isolation and solitude to think clearly and to read and to study. And then I also feel like I really need a place like New York City and and Brooklyn to see what other artists are doing, and not just from the U.S., but what I love about New York is that it is very international. You meet artists from all over the world and see what people are making. So I crave both of those worlds, and I really do appreciate and feel very honored to live where I do for that reason. I'm definitely not a performance artist, although I feel like the process of what I do is kind of a performance. This spring or fall, I'm going to be doing a performance piece. My husband owns a bar up here in Peekskill, New York, and they do drag shows there, and I'm going to be part of that, where I'm going to be a drag king, and I'm going to have a big I-beam there where I'm going to use the oxyacetylene torch, which is more dramatic and creates a lot more flame, and I'm going to cut it down the middle and turn it into a vagina beam, sort of turning a phallic symbol into more of a vaginal symbol.
How does your style vary the different materials you work with?
A lot of it has to do with the technique and the process, although I don't romanticize the handmade. It's just the way I usually think, is in the process of getting some things machine-made now as I'm getting older. But one of the things I've been making lately is coming back to my hairdressing roots, is I'm doing hairstyles on tires. I had a show in Germany where I got some large tires, and then I put hair on them, and then I French braided the tires. So I always found the pattern of a tire tread to be similar to the pattern of a French braid. So I started making different hairstyles on tire, mimicking tread patterns with hair. And it is, as much as I socially didn't fit into the hairdressing world, I really like, you know, working with my hands and creating patterns and doing something a little more abstract. So I'm coming back to using things like that. And same with the dirt and the sand sifting pieces. That originated from seeing my grandmother decorate cakes with doilies. She put doilies on cakes and sift sugar through it and lift it up. I like that combination or contrast of the industrial and the domestic worlds for me. It was a kind of a visual balance. I was never very interested in creating a specific political comment. I guess I see my work as more as a visual devil's advocate, you know, questioning the judgments that we do place on things, people, objects, images. I like to think of them as there's humor involved in it, the ridiculousness.
And along with your very innovative combination of your hairdressing and your art practice, would you like to share your experience and advice on how you successfully gain such valuable representation with some prominent galleries and museums and other avenues to increase your local and international exposure?
That is it's a tricky world, but I feel like I've been quite lucky in some sense that I was in the right places at the right time, I guess, because I'm not a very sociable person. I know when I first started out, people kept telling me, oh, you have to go to the openings and you have to meet people and make the connections. So I kind of assumed I wasn't going to be very successful because I don't have that kind of drive or that kind of interest in the social aspects of the art world. So actually, starting art school later in life, I was very motivated. You know, I've been wanting to go to art school my whole life, and it was a struggle to get there. And so I just worked really hard, and I think I stood out, and that's how I got the show at the Art Gallery of Nova Scotia. And that show was written up in Sculpture Magazine. I also got that award, which sent me to New York. And I also became friends with June Leaf and Robert Frank at the time, who had a place in Nova Scotia and in New York, and they brought me down to New York a few times, and I stayed with them. They were there for me. June was very supportive of my career and my life trying to move on. And then when I moved to New York, to go to grad school, I got a scholarship for grad school, and I felt like things just sort of unfolded in front of me. I met an artist here. I got this amazing, incredible situation where I have art patrons here who gave me a house to live in, rent-free, in the Hudson Valley. You know, I give them artwork whenever I can, and that's given me the freedom to focus on my work. When I was in grad school, I was put in this exhibition for one of the up-and-coming grad students, I guess, to look out for, and that led to a Chelsea gallery in New York City, which led to a museum shows, which, you know, one thing just led to another. It just kept kind of branching out from there. I guess I let it unfold naturally in front of me. And now that I'm, you know, 50 and I'm in that sort of mid-career, mid-life time, I feel like it's a change again. I think when you're new on the scene, everybody seems to be very interested in you, and then they naturally sort of start to not get interested in you. I feel like I'm in this new stage, I guess. I taught when I was going through grad school, but I haven't done much teaching since, and now I feel more drawn to being more sociable and teaching more. We'll see what that brings.
You certainly have even more to offer students.
Right, that's what I felt. I felt like this would be the right age and time to become more a teacher. I feel like I have definitely a lot to talk about now, and a lot of experience and a lot of travels. I've had a lot of gallery representation. You know, at one point I had 8 different galleries representing me. And as difficult as that was and stressful as that was, I learned a lot how to deal with galleries and the contrasts that happened there. Because that's always a struggle with artists and galleries. It's like a relationship with somebody that isn't always easy.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for speaking with us tonight. And I wish you continued success in your career and good luck with your upcoming performance.
Good luck with the vagina beam. Thank you.
Okay. That was Cal Lane, internationally renowned Canadian sculptor, speaking with us from New York. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.